I would like to make a few comments before we pass out the spreadsheets and the bill. As many of you are aware, this is normally what we call a non-bonding year, but we are allowed to go to $135 million in bonding and still stay within our 3% cap. Now, normally that wouldn't amount to much. I've got, I think it's five things in the bonding section. One is the MNSQ recommendation. One is the University of Minnesota recommendation. Another is Central Corridor and the bridge bonding, and then part of the St. Paul Depot. But as you know, there was a fair amount of one-time money available. I had asked for $160 million, which kind of did what I felt we should be doing this year. I ended up with $137 million. One project got cut quite short, but I know we're not supposed to say what's in the other body's bills, but they've got that one in there, and so I cut back quite a bit, and that's the Red Lake High School. But it is my intention in conference committee to do what I can to have the amount of money that would cover that. As usual, I said no to a lot more things than I said yes to. Yes. People tended to think this was almost like a regular bonding year, being there was one-time money. But there are just certain things we don't get into, things like community centers and some of that, because it just opens up the floodgates. So I probably said no to more things than I said yes to. One other thing that's in this bill, but I don't want to talk about that at all until we get through the rest of it. And that has to do with, let's see, what is it we call that? The Minnesota Biomedical Sciences Research Facilities Authority, the University of Minnesota. That one, to keep it alive, we really have to put it in this bill. Now, there's been some objections to the fact that we are sort of setting the stage for future legislators and making this authorization. There isn't any other request we've had where I would be willing to do that with. But this has to do with setting up a plan for these medical bioscience buildings. I was talking to former State Senator Bob Curlin, kind of became our resident economist. And I said, what do you see in the future that could really get the state of Minnesota moving in the future? He said, medical research. He said, if the University of Minnesota and Mayo make breakthroughs, which they seem to be on the verge of doing, it would do a tremendous amount for the economy of the future of the state of Minnesota. So I do have this in the bill, but like I say, I would prefer that nobody come to that until we get through all the rest, and then we'll, whatever comments you have, feel free to make. Go ahead, hand off the spreadsheets and the bills, and let's not have a stampede. I mean, there aren't any fatalities that way.
I started to, and then I was neglectful and didn't pursue it.
Oh,
I feel guilty.
Subcommittees.
Do you know who's doing it? I saw somebody with the tool, but I, and it made me think of it. I'm embarrassed. I loved it. I mean, I you know, we thought it was very worthwhile. So.
Thank you.
I don't know if that's the pressure.
A few more.
That's right. Spot.
It's kind of hard to tell just how many of us are really here.
On any given day.
How many? What'd you say?
On any given day, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, right.
We're pretty much through.
I went to room 123. I had read the schedule and I saw that we were in this room and had wondered how we were all going to fit. And still went to 123.
We did that.
There you go.
Yeah, we did it in the transit.
Have you been there already? Okay.
Is Murphy on this committee?
Yeah, I just left.
They had the Met Council on page 2. They don't have to list the Robert Street.
Are we building any hockey rinks with this one?
Gosh.
Are you doing that one, or is that a separate bill?
St. Cloud? Do they do it under higher ed? And Duluth is the DAC thing.
Yeah.
This is bonding. Okay. What did he say about one-time money? See, I don't think he's got one-time stuff on here. What did Gary, what was he saying about, you know, this one I was walking in?
About what?
About one-time money.
Well, there you are.
Is it? Okay, there it is.
It's under employment.
Okay, there's DAC and there's there. Okay.
Hey.
You're looking for
I'd like to have your attention. I will go through the spreadsheet.
What he said about one time.
If you wish to ask questions as we go, that's fine.
I think we put this on. Want to get going. That's a joke. Yeah,
they can do canoes.
They're ready.
They're ready to put in.
Just looks so funny sitting there. We were behind, but we're not even doing that.
I guess
we're
What's this?
Yeah. I thought it was forensic.
Okay, I'll begin going through it. On the spreadsheet, under the University of Minnesota, the HEPR, or asset preservation, is $22 million. That's what they asked for. Biomedical science research facility, it's $14,400,000. They asked for, I think it was $16 million, something like that. Instead of doing the 90%, which they asked for, we are doing 80%, and that's what also will be in that larger bill of theirs. They felt that they couldn't handle the normal one-third, two-thirds, and they didn't want to dump it on their students, and that's very understandable. But when it came to the 90% request, I think that was their beginning offer. So this is at 80% of the cost of that particular facility. Under MinSCU, HEPR is $30 million, which is what they requested. Land acquisition at Bemidji State University is $2 million, and at Fond du Lac is $1,800,000. Under education, Red Lake School, I've got it $5 million, but like I say, I certainly hope in conference committee we can do their request of $30 million.
How much?
Under natural resources, Cuyuna Country State Recreation Trail, $125,000. There's a fair amount of federal money involved there. I wasn't going to get into trails, but I did end up with three or four of them because of certain circumstances. Fort Snelling, Upper Bluffs Repair,
$500,000.
That's a match also. Gateway Trail is $650,000.
That's the one.
The reason we went with that this year, there's an intersection right by where this tunnel will go that is going to be under construction, and I think it'll be like 6 months that's going to be tied up, and this just was an opportune time to do that. So because of the timing, we did that. The Greenleaf Park is $700,000. We've had appropriations for them in the past. Lake Zumbrel Restoration is $350,000. That's between, I guess you could say, Red Wing and Rochester, and they have a very bad problem with silt filling up one end of that lake. Red River Basin digital mapping, we've had that request in for several years, but we never had the general fund money to do it. And what that is that airplane flies over at a certain elevation, takes thousands of photographs, and they get a very detailed elevation within 6 inches, I think it is. Plan is to do that in the entire Red River Basin, including the North Dakota side. North Dakota has already I think, appropriated their $600,000. The watershed up there is coming up with money, and the federal government is going to come up with money. Once that is done, when they run that through a computer, they're going to be able to tell at whatever crest the Red River is exactly what acres in that entire basin are going to be underwater. So it's just going to be a very useful tool in the future. Stillwater flood control, that has quite a bit of federal money that's already allocated, and this would simply match that. Under the under pollution control, Albert Lea remedial system, we thought we had funded that last time, and that was we're going to move this one landfill over to another landfill, but if we fell short on money. That landfill is right next to a lake, and I don't know why they ever put it right next to a lake in the first place. It's leaching into the lake, so we thought because of the timing of that we needed to do that this year. Under Water and Soil Resources Board, there's a it's basically a planning money for this Gaylord Lake Titlow watershed. If you have any comments about that, you better ask Kathy rather than me. Then the RIM Reserve Conservation, that's $10 million. That was the governor's recommendation. I guess there is $15 million sitting there of federal money that can be matched, but we went with the governor's recommendation of $10 million. Then the Zoological Gardens, it's, can you explain what that amounts to? I have a vague idea, I guess, but it was very timely that had to be done now, I guess.
Mr. Chair, that was in the governor's request, and it was the zoo is having a problem with their water system, and so this would just repair that.
I think
the
zoo
is here, so
there was some kind of mandate on that too. I think, and they just needed to do it. So the timing was such that we needed to do it this year. Under administration, this year we did put the trunk highway bonds in here because we've had so much problem in the past with those falling through the cracks. And the DOT building, as you know, these panels are falling down, and this would fund the headquarters of the DOT. And then property acquisition for administration was $2,325,000. Could you explain a little better what that goes for?
There's a church property that is for sale, and the Department of Administration would like to get that for parking purposes, and that also is in the governor's request.
Now, I think when it comes to some of these buildings that we built in the past, there wasn't enough parking available for the people that worked there. The Senate did have enough parking, but in conference committee we didn't, and I know the governor asked, what in the world were you thinking when you didn't have enough parking for those facilities? It was the House's fault. We had it. But we're going to correct their lack of vision. Okay, let's see. Oh, yeah, Anoka County Forensic Crime Laboratory. There's going to be, two or three counties going together with a regional jail. And they have been waiting like 6 months for results from the DNA evidence and so on. And they just feel that there has to be another facility that will speed that up. And if you have any questions on that way, feel free to ask later. The Browns Valley flood mitigation, you've all heard about that in the news. And I put $2 million in there, and it's worded very loosely in a way that we can be somewhat flexible on that. But when we're in conference committee, we'll have more information about just what is needed there. The next three on the training centers, we had all these in our bill last time, and putting it in once again. There was something in conference committee come out for the Scott County Training Center last time, but this would kind of finish off those training centers that we had in our bill last time.
Training center.
Under transportation, the high-speed rail, St. Paul to Chicago, that's $2 million. Local bridges is $30 million. You know, when it comes to these bills in the off year, most parts of the state don't get projects. But there's about $100 million worth of requests on these local bridges, and almost every county in the state gets something out of this. So it's mostly policy. It'll be money well spent, but it's also a little political in that everybody in the legislature would get something within their districts. Mankato headquarters, that again is the trunk highway. That's $20 million. The price keeps going up as we keep putting it off. I don't know how long we've been going, Senator Murphy, something like 8 years or something. And the city agreed to take over the old headquarters, and they were going to renovate it. And then I think they put $1.5 million into the site for the new DOT headquarters. It's all been hanging there for years and years. It's in Senator Murphy's bill, but I put it in here this year, too, to make sure that it doesn't fall through the cracks any time in the future. Then port development assistant, $500,000. That's one particular project we felt probably should be done this year.
Where is that project, Mr. Chairman?
What's that?
The port development project, where is it?
Red Wing, Senator Murphy's district. Maybe you could explain it a little better than I can.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Pappas, what's actually going to happen is they're going to buy some dredging equipment so that they don't have to continue to contract through the Army Corps of Engineers to do the dredging at these ports. So they're going to use some on-hand port development money. Port and Red Wing is going to offer up some money, and this is kind of a match to make it work. I think there's $1.2 million worth of this dredging equipment available for sale right now, and they feel if they can buy it, then they'll just be able to use it in all those port development cities, Winona, St. Paul.
Yeah, there seems to be a timing factor there when it comes to those purchases. So. Let's see, where am I? Okay, under Metropolitan Council, that central corridor, that's the request of $40 million. The state is expected at some point to come up with $140 million, and this is kind of a down payment on it. Trail?
Yeah, that's Monson's Trail.
Oh, yeah. The South St. Paul Arch Bridge, that's a trail. It would be connected with an arch bridge, $600,000 at South St. Paul. Why don't you explain the next one?
A trail.
Council study.
The Metropolitan Council study on transitway corridors is for $250,000, and that's kind of to look at the feasibility of transit corridors along I-94, 394, 494, the Red Rock Corridor, the Rush Line, and the Southwest Transit Corridor.
Yeah, there were requests on all of these, and we decided to just put them together and have a study, so probably can be recommendations coming back next year for the bonding bill.
Mr. Chairman, kind of make this match up with what is in the transportation bill. I think we need to add that Robert Street corridor in there too at some time.
Yeah, that's. Why don't you just make the motion now, so we?
I'd make that motion.
Okay, the motion has been made. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried.
Thank you.
Thanks.
The St. Paul Depot, $1.2 million of that is in under bonding. This 2.8 makes a total of $4 million. And then the next line talks about the bonding for 1.2. Springbrook Nature Center, $2.5 million. That was something we had in the bill last time. I fully intended to come out of conference committee with it. It fell through the cracks right in the end, so we are going with that once again. West Central Chemical Treatment Facility. There's 11 counties up there that want to build a regional jail. First, they asked if the state could be involved, and I said we've always said no to that. But I guess it's something like 80% of the people in jail have got chemical dependency problems, and they do want a treatment center within that regional jail. And so we put $150,000 for a study to see how we can work that out and possibly participate a year from now. Under corrections, we did the governor's recommendations and the requests, Newport Heights recommendations.
Well, there were two pieces to the corrections request, the perimeter system renovation for 3.875 and then a ventilation system renovation for 2.42. And I know corrections is here if we need an explanation.
If there's any questions, we can have them come up. Bayport, under economic development, Bayport sewer is $150,000. Bioscience corridor, that's that St. Jude facility. They have facilities on both sides of Highway 36, and they there's a bridge that's badly needed being replaced, and this does, I guess, planning and the pre-engineering on that particular bridge. Duluth Entertainment and Convention Center, $37 million. That's just a hair below the request, but very, very close to what they asked for. Itasca County Infrastructure, $30 million. That's infrastructure for the steel mill that they feel will be going in up there. Rochester Civic Center, $2.5 million. That's for some planning money for major expansion of the Rochester Convention Center. They have been churning down, I don't know, 70-some conventions a year, mainly medical conventions that are worldwide in scope, because they don't have enough facilities. Most of the people coming in there for the additional conventions would be coming in from outside of Minnesota, so it's good economics. St. Cloud area arena renovation, $11 million. We've had that before us before. And then down under, Lewis and Clark, you see that's general fund. That's $5.2 million, and it replaces the $5.282 million that was in bonding. The Department of Finance said that can't be bonds. It links up those communities in southwestern Minnesota with South Dakota, and it's a very major water project that includes Iowa, southwest Minnesota, and South Dakota. So this is there's a lot of federal money involved in that one as well. So that basically does it. The general fund then came to $136,932,000. I was supposed to stay under $137,000. And then it's the trunk highway bonds and the $134,986,000 for the bonding. So we stayed within the recommendations in both those areas. So at this point, we'll go through this, and then later we'll talk about the University of Minnesota Bonding Authority. Any questions or comments of the committee at this point? Senator Michelle.
Mr. Chair, nothing on the state capitol renovation?
No, there was not. I really wanted $130 million for the first phase on the one time, but as you know, the one time got very, very squeezed. There was no encouragement whatsoever from the other side, unfortunately, and none from the governor as well. So in the end, I couldn't come up with the money that was necessary. I feel bad about that because we're probably going to have to put it in a bonding bill at some time in the future, and it's going to take up a lot of space. But it's needed. I think the Senate was ready to move, and nobody else was. Senator Dale.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thanks for including some funding for Greenleaf State Park, and also thanks for this paragraph in here extending the time that Annandale Maple Lake has time to get some money from the PFA for their sewage treatment plant.
You can vote for the bill then.
Yes.
Any further comments or questions about what's in the spreadsheet? Fine. Any questions about, maybe the people from the University of Minnesota should get up at the table. This is a fairly extensive, why don't you go ahead and sit on the end of the table. I'm not sure if there's going to be questions. This did pass the Senate, I guess it was a year ago, with a very large majority, over 80% of the vote, I think, or something like that.
Well, Mr.
Senator Cohen's bill And so he can make comments on it as well.
Mr. Chairman, there's a brief amendment, but I'm hoping that we'll have the president and vice president for more than just questions, but hopefully give them an opportunity to talk to us for a couple minutes about what's proposed.
Go ahead and just explain why we should deviate from our regular process and lay the groundwork for the future on this.
Chair Langseth, members of the committee, thanks for giving us this brief opportunity to visit with you this morning. I'm joined by Senior Vice President Sarah, who's the Senior Vice President for the Academic Health Center at the University of Minnesota, and Richard Fitzenreiter, our Chief Financial Officer and Vice President for Finance. And let me just make a couple of comments, and then I'll ask Senior Vice President Sarah to join me in his comments. I think Senator Langseth framed this issue very well when he talked about the future of our state and indicated that investment and discovery in biomedical sciences was clearly going to be on the critical path to a much greater and, I think, more vibrant economic future for our state. This happens to be one of the areas where Minnesota has extraordinary strength. It has strength in the research and development work at the University of Minnesota, in the basic and applied sciences, at Mayo Clinic. There are very few states, particularly states of our size or with our economic configuration, that could boast about the kind of strength that we have on the ground in these areas. And these strengths have been built literally over decades through the investment of the Minnesota State Legislature and the support of many, many governors. So that's one point I want to make. But if we were just trying to advance the biomedical sciences in Minnesota without being surrounded by a vibrant economic community, I think we would have some heavy lifting to do. There are many states around the country that are doing that and making very, very substantial investments. But we happen to be surrounded by probably one of the most vibrant and strong biomedical sciences industries in the entire world. The employment growth in this industry was approximately 30% in the last 10 years, compared to about 10% in employment growth in many other economic sectors. And so this is an area that represents a unique opportunity for Minnesota, a unique strength and comparative advantage, but it also maps to the strengths and comparative advantages of our state. We have to keep this industry strong and vibrant if we're going to maintain Minnesota's economy and quality of life. So why this proposal? Why now? Why is this the right strategy as we think about Minnesota's future? You simply cannot plan. If you want to build a sports facility, or if you want to build a lot of other academic buildings, classroom buildings, you can go through the normal bonding cycle. But in this particular area, you need a long-term time horizon. You need to be able to count on the investment that needs to be made in here over roughly an 8 to 10 year period for a lot of reasons, because the science is changing, because the opportunities are there to hire the people, because the laboratories of the past are not the laboratories you need to sustain this critically important work in the biological and medical biomedical sciences today. And if we go through a normal sort of bonding cycle and we come here and we hope that the building will be approved, it will be about 65 to 70% of every bonding bill for the next 10 years. And I've got to tell you, as a president of the University of Minnesota, I can't bring you one of those buildings every 2 years as a part of the normal bonding cycle without eroding the core strength that we have in the capital assets of the University of Minnesota, in our research and outreach centers, in our coordinate campuses, and on the Twin Cities campus. So this is an extraordinary investment need, an investment need, I think, that's created in part by the incredible advances that are occurring in this area, the need to really pay attention to the core infrastructure we need to support the research, development, and the industries of Minnesota. And we need a long-term time horizon, because I just give you one example, and Vice President Sarah could give you dozens of others. In one of the hires that we recently made, and it's directly related to the building on Delaware Avenue, in which we had to retrofit two floors to support the work of a leading scientist in medicinal chemistry. It took 4 years to hire this person. It took 4 years of planning, 4 years of recruitment, very substantial capital investment, very substantial programmatic investment in the hire and then the laboratories and the people who are going to do this work. This person does the critical research that's necessary to really fund and support sort of the new age work in medical devices and medical technology that Vice President Sarah can talk about much more intelligently than yours truly. But that's just one example, and you need the long-term horizon. The state needs to say, as it does with its transportation system, this is part of our core infrastructure. We need to take a long 10-year view, and if we don't, other states will do it. Other states with far less capability on the ground in research and development and technology transfer, other states with far less going for them with respect to the industries that support the economy of this state. So we felt when we looked at the long-term horizon, there wasn't any way that we could get there with the normal bonding bill and the normal bonding needs facing the University of Minnesota. This is one of the things that the University of Minnesota does uniquely for the state of Minnesota. It's part of our core infrastructure. This university will bring in close to $600 million, and nearly half of it is in the biomedical sciences in this year alone. And so we felt that it was urgent to bring a new idea, a new strategy forward, one that we thought would work, one that we know will work, and I think put us on a really strong foundation for a much more vibrant future in this area than we might otherwise have if we pass on this investment. So let me stop here, and if Vice President Sarah has anything he wants to add, ask him to do that at this time, and we're here also to take your questions on these issues.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I will continue where President Brunix left off. We are in the middle of a national competition for who has the ranking in the biomedical sciences. Will it be the East Coast? Will it be the West Coast? Will we be a flyover state, or will we, in fact, continue to be a world player like we are now in the device industry? It's very clear, I think, to people who have looked at this that we can be a world player 50 years from now, 30 years from now, 20 years from now, but we need to make the investment. The investment must be in the university, which is where the state has localized its capacity in this area, and through its partnerships with the one other institution that can help us on the science side, which is the Mayo Clinic, and through our partnerships with the Minsky systems, where we have more research support and the capacity to build the workforce to actually do the work. That's how this thing fits together. As we look at this, and our capacity, we in fact have a capacity to perform research issue. Our faculty have never been more productive. Capacity requires two things, faculty and facilities. Now, for us to recruit faculty, we compete nationally and internationally with the Harvards, the Hopkins, the Yales, the Michigans, the Wisconsins, the California system, and Los Angeles and San Diego. They want the same people we do. It's that group of top-shelf, productive people, and we're very competitive. The problem we have now is we need the facilities to recruit the faculty into. We are at capacity with our current facilities. And that's how these two pieces fit together. President Brunix explained to you, I thought, in a very illustrative case of Professor Georg about the 4 years of work, the need to have the facilities that we could recruit her into, and she's here and she's already producing new grants and new innovation. So this ability to plan is absolutely critical for us to target which faculty do we go and recruit, and we also have to retain the ones that we have. Now, does that mean we're going to be number one in all areas? No, can't do that. So the faculty have focused where they wish to grow and really move into number one. That's in many areas of neuroscience. You've heard about Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and memory disorders, and the latest of which is retraining our soldiers who are coming back from Iraq who have various forms of brain injury that have never been seen, but whom we are now learning we can retrain them because of the plasticity of the human brain and the neuroscience research that's beginning to show that. Certain areas of cardiovascular disease are key on the list, and the other one where we are already a world-class organization is in imaging. This magnetic resonance imaging research, most of what you experience when you go have an MRI has come out of the University of Minnesota. To maintain that, we must have the facilities and the faculty. So for us, the goal is really for Minnesota not to become a flyover state in the biosciences. I think we feel very strongly we can and are doing this and have a long list of examples of success. We just need this facilities authority to build the facilities, and we can recruit the faculty who do the work. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, a couple of comments. First of all, as you indicated, and you and I have been the two people who have worked on this over these last couple of years, probably everybody at this table, well, not quite everybody, but most people at this table voted for this legislation last year on the Senate floor. It passed by a vote of, I want to say something like 52 to 13, if I'm not mistaken. That's approximately what the vote was.
I was a total of 55 to 13.
Okay.
51 to 15 is the way I remembered it. You say it's close members. Enough for university work.
Get us up to 60.
It's a good football score. Sir Link's at that. It is up to 65, I think. At any rate, so most people at this table have voted for this legislation, but I just wanted, I've got an amendment, and Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure when you want the amendment, but let me just supplement what the President and Vice President said in the context of where we are. The problem is 50 years ago, when the university was at the cutting edge of so much of this, the states were islands. You didn't have to worry about what was going on a competitive basis. Minnesota, the University of Minnesota could do this on its own, didn't need the significant support from the state legislature, didn't necessarily have to worry about competition elsewhere. The people were here, they were in place. At this point, to succeed in a much different economic, scientific, and academic environment, you've got to make sure that we remain competitive beyond our borders. I think one of the things that's very difficult in this place, Mr. Chairman, is on a host of issues, not just simply this issue, although this is of critical importance, but on a host of issues that this legislature deals with. We are now dealing in a competitive environment in a number of fields, whereas that was not the case even when I was originally in the legislature, much less 50, 60 years ago. This is at the top of the list in terms of making sure we can remain competitive. Absent this kind of legislative authority, we then put the University of Minnesota at that much more of a disadvantage. I think the President talked about attempting to secure the services of those scientists and others in academics that are needed to put these, not just have the buildings, but fill the buildings, do the work. And you can't do that and plan ahead without the ability to go to those people, as the President indicated, and say, we'll be online in 2 years with what we're going to do with you. And so this is what makes this that much more critical and unique from where we were X number of decades ago. We're in that competitive environment, and unless members we help the university succeed, we'll just keep on falling that much further behind. As Vice President Sarah said, this is a competition with the East Coast, the West Coast. And if you look at what states, not just simply a Massachusetts or a California, but what states like Ohio, Georgia, Pennsylvania have done, Wisconsin, absent our support for this, it makes it that much more difficult for us to remain competitive on a national basis.
Okay. Any questions or comments of the committee? Okay. Was there any amendments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've got the A1 amendment, if you want that. I don't know if that's been distributed or not.
Senator Cohen, I guess those those years, I think, are off. We were going to do it in the off years, 2009, 11.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this was left over from last year's bill, so with the delay of a year, we've delayed it by a year in terms of the years.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Fitzenreiter can explain the reason for the year change.
And there's a second part of the amendment that makes sure that we have clarification as to what happens if the legislature doesn't meet or we don't take action, that the authority then has the ability to go ahead if we have not enacted the legislation.
You have a copy of the amendment?
Mr. Chairman, yes.
Yeah. Comment?
Mr. Chairman, members, the particular years that are listed here are consistent with the discussion of making sure. I can't speak for the Finance Department, but my understanding is that these years will result in the bonding that's approved to hit and be counted against the short session, the odd-numbered year bonding authority levels. And these years work with that off-year bonding.
I don't understand that.
But I guess I'm kind of wondering about the 2010. I mean, that's 3 years from now rather than 2 years from now.
Mr. Chairman, members, what's on here is the remaining four projects because you authorized the MDH project in the other part of the bonding bill. So the next project after that one would hit in 2010. The way the bill is currently structured is the authority would make a recommendation to the legislature in the 09 legislative session, in the odd-numbered legislative session. Then the grant is actually approved, and we begin construction July 1 of 09, which is really fiscal 10, which ties to this bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I'm reading the first part of the amendment. And it reads, project grants recommended by the authority are approved by the legislature. And then it goes on with another clause that says if legislation has not been enacted to accept, modify, or reject. I don't think we need accept in there because the first part of the phrase says if nothing happens, they are accepted. So if the legislature acts, it would be to modify or reject. Mr. Chairman, I'd move to
Senator Cohen, what does this comment on autopilot amendment? Well, Mr. Chairman, that should be okay. I'm not sure that makes any difference to Mr. Fitzenreiter, but that should be okay.
To remove it or
yes,
to leave
it? Yes, as you suggested.
Okay, motion has been made. Any questions on the motion? Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is this my understanding that this is now pretty much automatic, that the legislature doesn't have to take any action at all, that these monies would be made available? I'm still trying to understand. Is that what this is saying to us?
Well, I think it'll be available, but it isn't in concrete because it's not in the Constitution. But Fitzgerald.
Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, in the Rules Committee on Saturday, an amendment was put into the bill in which the authority must make a recommendation to the legislature by January 15th of every odd-numbered year. The legislature then needs to act to approve that grant during the odd-numbered year session. This amendment is one that simply says if the legislature, for some odd reason, doesn't get its act together and enact that grant, the grant is approved. But the bill now requires the authority to not only approve a grant, but it has to make a recommendation to the legislature, and the legislature has to act.
Okay. Senator Cole.
And Mr. Chairman, Senator Roebling, just to follow up on the chairman's comments, obviously this is not constitutional, and so a future session, the legislature is not totally bound by what we do. Now, obviously, the hope and the expectation is that we will not back away from this. And so, to be fair, this makes it that much more difficult to do so. But we're not putting it into the Constitution.
Also, I could see in sometime in the future that the university might not be ready for one of these. And obviously, there's the flexibility where we can put something off for a year or whatever fits their timetable.
Mr. Chair, Occasionally, the legislature may not be ready for some of these either, and I can't foresee all the circumstances, but I'm thinking if we have about a year and a half, is that what we're looking at? By the time they submit their recommendations until March 15th, so it's a year and 3 months, to act on their proposals. I'm just thinking, you know, if there is some financial crisis going on, we maybe should have the flexibility to decide how we're going to respond to the recommendations. And this does concern me that it boxes us in somewhat, even though it could be removed that particular year if there is some crisis, I imagine. And we could come back and take this out because it's only going to be in statute, correct? It's, as Senator Cohen said, it's not in the Constitution. But it does somewhat box us in. And I don't know what our financial situation always is from year to year, but we know we've had some pretty dark years.
But, of course, this is bonding. And sometimes doing bonding during tough years is a good thing to do. Because if it was general fund, then I think I would share your concern. But it would be bonding. And obviously very little of that would come out that particular year, which may be a crisis year financially. So I'm comfortable with the fact that it's bonding rather than general fund. Okay, any further comments?
So, Mr. Chairman, we've got the amendment. I moved the amendment to your bill.
Okay, everybody understand the amendment now? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
And, Mr. Chairman, that was as amended by Senator Frederickson.
That's correct. Senator Pappas?
Mr. Chairman, I have the A2 amendment. Chairman, this does not regard the Biosciences Center, so I apologize if we weren't finished with that section, but you just called on me.
Well,
so.
Yeah, let's deal with it, but if there's any questions later,
okay.
I'll
okay.
Keep your seats there.
They were about to panic that I was doing something.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman and members, the chairman and hopefully the committee has been very generous in allocating the money for the Central Corridor and Union Station. We really appreciate that so we can move forward on that project. We have lots of complicated issues, and this is one. District Heating and Cooling provides the heating and cooling for the city of St. Paul and for the Capitol. And with the corridor going down Cedar Street, that's where they have all their underground facilities. And it's going to cost about $19 million to move those facilities. And that cannot and should not be counted toward our overall cost of the Central Corridor because it's a nonprofit, not a city entity. What this amendment will do is it will allow them, the state has to grant them permission to apply to the federal government for a grant to cover that. And Congresswoman McCollum has said that we need to have this language to allow them to accept any federal money they might get. If I'd move there are no questions.
Any questions on the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Period.
Thank you.
Are there any further questions for the university? Any questions on the bill itself?
Mr. Chairman, just on the university, we're trying to do some past legislation, but so I'm not trying to make this an advertisement, but I was remiss because I talked about, because you've been very active with this, and I've obviously this is my legislation. I appreciate it being in this bill, but I think for any of us who serve on Senator Pappas's division, we also are well aware that she's been the other person in this place who has pushed and pushed for these kinds of advances with the university.
And, you know, I think for this to happen in the end, the governor is going to have to weigh in. I can't speak for the governor, but I'm hoping he will, and I think maybe he will. But Senator St. John.
Well, I'll just be brief, but I wanted to just join you and Senator Cohen. This is a great big deal. It's a big step for Minnesota. I think a momentous moment for the Minnesota Senate. It's our chance to make things happen, and you either make things happen or you sit back and watch them happen. And I think in this case, we're not going to sit back. We're going to step forward, and we're going to advance biosciences in Minnesota. And
And that will be to our credit, I think, as we look back 10 or 20 years from now, and we'll have the kind of biosciences base within our state, utilizing certainly the University of Minnesota and collaboration with Mayo, that will make this state a center place for this kind of research around the world. And so I just thank the university for coming forward with this. This is a very competitive area. We all know that. Again, lead, follow, or get out of the way, and I think we want to lead, and congratulate the university for coming forward.
Senator Stinson, would you like to make a motion?
Mr. Chair, members, I would move that...
Just a minute. Senator Robley.
Is he moving the bill? Oh, I have it. I'd like to have something discussed before we do that,
okay,
Mr. Chair.
Okay, go ahead.
On page 30, section 30, it was the issue Senator Dill was thanking you for, Mr. Chair, for putting in the language which allows Annandale and Maple Lake to stay on the list for the Public Facilities Authority's grant money, even though they did not meet the deadline. And this is causing a hardship to some other communities. And I know some of them are here today to talk about what this means to them. And I'm wondering if we could just have a little discussion about that, because they were the next ones in line. And after Annandale didn't meet the deadline, they moved ahead with the project thinking that they probably could get funding. And if we extend this, they get bumped out again. And so I'm just wondering if maybe we could have, I think the mayor of Harris is here, to talk about what this means to them.
Okay, I think we're completed with the university. If anybody's got any questions, you can come back again.
All right, good. Thank you.
Okay, you wish to have somebody come forward?
Can you believe his Latin God tubbies?
Oh, yeah. Is Terry Coleman here?
No, I can't either.
He stepped out for just a second.
Could Terry Coleman come forward? Right. This is the language that he asked for. So if he could come up and mention the reason for the language.
There's a little bit of, he's running away from talking. Yeah. A little bit of that.
Terry? Yeah.
Love his name.
I do too. Oh, got it.
Mr. Coleman, if you could just explain the reason for the language.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, my name is Terry Coleman, Executive Director of the Minnesota Public Facilities Authority. The reason we came forward with this is we had assumed that the Annandale Maple Lake court case would have been completed around the election time last fall. And then when it kept getting delayed, we started getting worried. The reason I'm adding or requested this language is several communities, including Annandale, Maple Lake, Princeton on the phosphorus grant program, have their plans and specs done. They've got the site, you know, procured. They're ready to bid. Actually, Annandale, Maple Lake's going to bid this month just so they know what the costs are, and hopefully the court case will get going, so they can try to meet the deadline. But if the court case isn't settled before June or May 1st, those funds automatically revert to projects down the list. And given the fact that they've gone this far and incurred that much cost, and it's no fault of their own, it's strictly up to the Supreme Court's lack of or unwillingness to make a decision in a timely manner, that they're going to lose funding. So we thought, given the cost, this would be a good thing to do in the interim that they've incurred. It does, again, allow the communities down below the list will get gypped out of those funds that we're holding back, but there's always next year. And to be quite honest, there's a lot of communities on the list that have already proceeded with projects hoping for reimbursement. And there's a lot of projects that still need work done, so we'll be back next year, too.
My name is Rick Smithson. I'm the mayor of the city of Harris. The reason that we would be opposed to this amendment is that, as was just stated, the cities down the list would be gypped out of this, out of these monies. And we, too, have gone through the entire process and have done all gone through a very expensive grant writing process and met all of the timeliness deadlines. And so we had experienced something similar earlier on in our process where we lost out on a grant for the same reason, with the Supreme Court making their decision that pushed us into the project that we have to do, but it also cost us some grants. And so what we're asking for now is that the rules would not be changed in the 11th hour, forcing those of us who have met the deadlines and are prepared to move forward, that we would not lose those funds.
Yeah. Any questions of Mr. Coleman or other? Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Coleman, when you're talking about the ranking, the list that you have, were Annandale and Maple Lake basically at the head of the list to begin with? Were their problems substantial enough so that they were moved ahead of other projects for some reason?
The two communities I mentioned, both Princeton and Annandale Maple Lake, were on the 2000 project priority list that PCA puts together and included in our intended use plan. The project priority list was amended through rules in March of 2006. So last year, the legislature allowed communities 1 year to get their project done that were on the old list that were going to be bumped down. And what we're trying to do is those communities that are going to lose their ranking based on new priorities is give them another year or at least 6 months after Annandale Maple Lake court case is resolved to get their project done. We're reserving money for that reason. Cities that are ranked high on the new list, this really doesn't affect them as new money becomes available in the future.
This money is in here at the request of the agency. Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the bill says Maple Lake, Annandale, but you've mentioned this town that I have a pretty intense interest in. You said Princeton twice, so I'm curious.
Well, Princeton's the same. There are several communities that cannot get permits to expand their wastewater treatment plant. Two that we have money reserved for, Annandale, Maple Lake, is on the top of the list for phosphorus grants. Princeton's number third. We have several others that are questionable whether or not they're going to meet that May 1st deadline. And I could mention some of them. LeSueur Henderson, which is getting close to bid, but I think they have to offset their phosphorus reduction. Red Wing, I'm not quite sure about where that status is, but they could lose money. Lester Prairie, I think, is out. Harris is kind of the next one in line to receive money. So if any of those do drop out, you know, Harris would be next in line. I'm not saying Harris is a low priority. They got serious problems and financial need, and I think we've already committed funds to them in form of loans. And
Mr. Chairman, I think the fair thing to do would be to provide enough funding so that they could all go forward. But Annandale and Maple Lake have been held up because of an interpretation of the Federal Clean Water Act from 1973, where the agency was going to allow trading before a TMDL was established and approved. And it was appealed all the way to the Minnesota Supreme Court. And the oral arguments were heard almost a year ago. And as Mr. Coleman said, they anticipated that the Supreme Court would make a ruling on their usual schedule within 6 months. And that ruling still has not been issued, which gives some indication of how contentious and how big an issue this is. And until that ruling is issued, Annandale and Maple Lake can't go forward. So the right answer would be to provide enough funding so that nobody is delayed and that Annandale and Maple Lake and Princeton can go forward. I just wanted to offer that as a little bit of background since I've been involved in this issue and this discussion.
Next year, I think we're going to have to come up with more funding than we have in the past, but that's true of so many things that it's getting tougher. Senator Schein.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, and I apologize for this. I haven't a clue what the issues are here. And Senator Fredrickson is talking about the court case, but I also kind of deduced from a couple things that have been said here at the witness table that some communities were brought not necessarily willingly to this process or Is that part of the issue here? And does that have anything to do with the court cases? Because it seems to me if somebody didn't want to be part of it and they've held things up, that they ought to be moved aside for people who are going forward. So but I don't know.
Oh, Mr. Chairman, Senator Schneid, the communities I mentioned are very anxious to proceed with their construction project. They have lost hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of development due to lack of inability to be able to hook up residents and businesses.
Oh, that's the issue. Okay.
They've been at this for quite a while. They just simply the state is simply not allowed to give them a permit to proceed with construction until that court case is resolved, and they know what the permit discharge limits can be done. Some of the smaller communities we've been able to go ahead and fund and let them do land applications, so there's no discharge into surface waters, but the court case really prohibits any community to expand the surface water discharge in about two-thirds of the state from the entire Mississippi River watershed. So that's the problem.
Thank you.
Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to ask Mr. Kuhlman, if Harris does not get funding in this round and they proceed with their project, which they are proceeding, would they be eligible in another round, or would they have advanced too far in the process to still be eligible later?
Mr. Chair, Representative Roebling, they still will be eligible later. One of the things in the phosphorus grant reduction program is we worked in, because many communities started construction back in March of 2000, is to put everybody on a level playing field, is that come May 1st, any given year, the funds that aren't under contract, we roll in and back to do the reimbursement projects. Unfortunately, when it's bond proceeds, it's real difficult to do reimbursement of projects already done because the Constitution kind of limits new money to actually be used to spend for construction costs. But general fund money or any other thing money we can come up with, the program was intended to get funding through Clean Water Legacy and have dedicated source of revenue coming in, which hasn't happened, but that was the concept behind the program, is not to have general fund or bond proceeds in it. But so they are eligible. That program does come in, and there are currently about 18 communities, I believe, that have already done the work that are eligible for reimbursement.
Okay. Any questions?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, the city of Harris would, at this point, would have to take out another additional financing for the city if we did not receive this grant, because at the time we applied for it, we knew where we were positioned. We knew very early on as we signed our documents that we were positioned very well for this, that we had met, that we were right inside the window, the time window. We had proven everything we needed to prove. And so for us, this would be more than just a timeliness setback. It would be a very significant financial setback for the city as well.
Any further comments? Senator Stephen.
Mr. Chair, I just wanted to take a quick minute to thank you for the good work of this bill and for your willingness to include the money for the St. Paul Union Depot in this bill. Members probably know that the federal government gave the state $50 million for the construction of the Union Depot, and this $4 million goes a good way towards matching the state's share of that. So I just wanted to take this opportunity to thank you for that and state that this is a great project, not just for St. Paul, but for the entire eastern side of the state.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, members, I would move that SC4773-5, as amended, be recommended for introduction.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Carried. Thank you.
Okay. Yes.